Hey guys, welcome back to Printavos, Print Hustlers Podcast. This is another episode, another in-person one. Super excited to be able to have Justin and Aaron to be able to drive down from their humble suburb abode.
Yeah.
All the way down back to Chicago. The original area, though, of Barrelmaker, right?
Correct.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, we were actually
That's why they say Chicago, home of the barrel makers.
Yeah, it used to be Chicago Maker Printing, but then we thought Barrel sounded a little bit like better Buffalo than Chicago. Yeah, had better SEO to it.
And we were making barrels, so.
Yeah, we were turning shirts into barrels.
And then back into shirts and then printing on them.
Yeah, for really cheap.
Justin and Aaron started Barrel Maker. When did you guys? It's been a while.
It's always been there, but no, we sort of.
Okay.
Okay, no. Sorry.
Yeah, let me tell the story.
Okay. I didn't invite me on the podcast.
You're an easy person to be on the podcast with because you talk so much. We started it in 2008 in Chicago in our apartment. So
were you guys in, like, downtown or where?
We lived in Logan Square, so northwest side of the city.
What were you doing then, day jobs wise?
Well, I was working retail and, like, serving tables. Justin,
we were having children out of wedlock.
Yeah, we had one. We had one child out of wedlock. Yeah. Hello, judge us. Just go ahead and judge us. And he was probably our son Cooper. He was, I don't know, he was a baby. And we started designing, like, little baby shirts for him. And they were really bad, but we thought they were good at the time.
Really?
In retrospect, they're
real bad.
Really bad.
Yeah.
But we actually, like, kind of, there's some, like, local Logan Square shops started to sell them. So then we obviously had to produce them. So we were outsourcing them to printers, these little baby shirts. Also, like little dresses made from men's dress shirts. We were, like, upcycling, you know, it's like a big thing, like upcycled fashion. So we were kind of, like, trying to bust into the, like, the youth market in the upcycling fashion.
I think everybody world who has kids, like, when you first have kids, you're like, oh, we're going to make kids products because it's just, like, there.
Sure.
Yeah.
And you're like, I could do this better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, some of our weird, the dresses were really weird. And now Ivy, our daughter, she's 3 now, but, like, I think she just outgrew it.
No, like, she wears it.
We busted out of the archives one of the, like, upcycled dresses.
Sure, sure.
Those were interesting because we would go thrifting and basically buy men's shirts and then convert them into, like, kind of these A-frame?
An A-line.
A-line skirts. Yeah. They were, like, pleated. Real weird, right? Like, they're kind of a weird look to them.
I mean, I still really like them.
Yeah.
Anyway. That's, yeah. So but the shirts weren't looking good. The dresses were fine, but the shirts weren't looking good. So Justin bought a press, was like, we're printers now. And so we learned.
Yeah.
We're just on Amazon or?
No. So I got fired from my job. So I was doing, like, marketing for, like, kind of like real estate marketing.
Uh-huh.
And it was 2008,
2009. Oh,
so, like,
okay.
Everybody, like, basically got fired.
Right.
So I got fired and I got an unemployment check. And basically, instead of paying rent or buying groceries or whatever, I was like, you know what? Let's manufacture the shirts ourselves. So we went to a place that we used to drive by all the time on Milwaukee. I don't know if it's still here. Was it called, like, Chicago Silkscreen Company or Chicago Screen?
I think that's still here.
Is it
on the highway?
It's, like, right off the highway.
Yeah. I see it when I drive on the highway.
Yeah, it's a weird little, like, kind of rundown looking building or whatever. And I think we went in there with a couple $100s. And I remember being like, we have a budget. We don't know anything about printing. Can you, like, help us, basically? And I think we walked out of there with clamps that you would put, like, on a table for, like, poster printing, like a water-based emulsion, I think white water-based ink.
Yeah.
One clamp. not even two clamps. I think we had one clamp.
Yeah, we were real confused and we left.
So we left with like basically our money spent, or like a portion of our money spent.
And to be honest, at this point, I was still like pretty annoyed that like my crazy husband was like, this is what we're doing now just because he said so, you know? Like, yeah, there was like a little bit of that dynamic. Sorry. I was like, what are you doing here? What are you getting me into, you know?
So we had some of this random shit, but like it didn't totally... I mean, in retrospect, it wasn't the right route at all. No. So then I think we started watching... I don't even know if it was both of us or if it was me, but probably I found some like some of those like early, like, you know, Ryanet videos and probably Cat Spit at the time too, and you start watching those. And so I hit up Ryanet and I bought a you know, like a silver press, like a lot of people in our generation, we got a silver press. And probably a few, like, maybe they had a package at the time that actually had stuff that was like more cohesive and made sense, because I know when we got in touch with Ryanet, we were actually able to start, you know, like the first trip, our first venture into it, like, didn't make sense. But then we had the stuff to actually like make a screen and do it. So,
wait, so you got the first one and said, this is,
just didn't know what to do. Yeah. Like, and it didn't even, it wasn't like the right
got
setup.
It. So the second one was like, I think this is more of a,
like it was like a tabletop press. I think we had squeegees. I know we had like little ink, like the inks were like pints, like they were tiny little things of ink. But we set up basically like in our bathroom, and our bathroom was where we sprayed out. So we had a tiny closet that was like a washer and dryer, and we turned that into like a dark room. So we coated some screens in there, put them in a garbage bag, and then exposed them with like, you know, a yellow, like, or no, like a halogen
bulb,
light.
Yeah, over the top halogen bulb.
The whole like
bulb,
basic, like very basic starter kit, you know? So we did that, made like one screen, and then once we made a screen, I reached out to someone that I knew from high school who had a podcast. And actually, like, it's kind of funny that we're podcasting right now, but like he started his podcast in like 2004, 2005. Like, he was super
visionary,
early in the podcasting out of his mom's basement. I mean, he's a horrible person and his podcast is terrible, but he had a big audience. So I reached out to him, and he used to have this forum on his site that was really active. So I hit him up and I was like, hey, my wife and I started a print shop. Like, we have all the top of line stuff. Like, we're really good, blah, blah, blah. Like, would you be interested in, you know, maybe we could print some of the shirts for your show and trade for like maybe a banner on your forum. And he was also a really good graphic designer. So he agreed, he made us a banner. He put it on his forum. And I think he ordered maybe 100 shirts to start Anvil 980s. Like, I learned screen printing from his order. I was like, he ordered Anvil 980s. So then we tried to do his prints. We started water-based. So we were doing water-based with a blow dryer in our living room. Like, total mess.
For all you t-shirt files out there, the design of the shirt was like the classic Run DMC shirt, you know, white, red on black, big block letters, and we were trying to do that with water-based ink
in our
apartment and being like, nothing is working, life is terrible, you know, like, it was so miserable, like, just trying so hard, just trying,
but we'd give him 100 shirts. And he's like, okay, cool. Like, these like 68 of them are terrible. We're like, all right, okay. So then we'd like print him some more, you know. And eventually, it was like, cool, we got him that order, you know. So we got a little bit better at it. And but because he had this banner, we also right away started getting other orders.
Wait, so the banner was custom live T-shirts or something?
Yeah, it was like Barrel Maker. I think we started as like, we had like Barrel Maker Clothing Company printing division or some weird shit. And then it was like, oh, let's just do Barrel Maker printing. Because we were still like, initially, we were still doing this clothing line, and we had our clothes in a few like local stores.
Okay.
But we immediately got orders. One of our first orders was like West Virginia. And I know then we had an order from Ohio. This was within like a week of doing this. So it was like, wait a second, like, we have orders, right? Like, this is something we could do. And sure. I think right away we just like switched to like custom printing. And I started making a website. So like we had a next door neighbor who helped us make this clothing website, and I learned how to like, I kind of like how you like learned how to code, mm-hmm. you know, I learned how to go in there and basically manipulate the website that she made and turn it all, because I didn't want to pay for a new website. So I figured out how to turn that into like
a website. Was it like an HTML site or a WordPress site?
It wasn't was it WordPress? I don't think it was WordPress, but it was sort of a templated thing. Okay. It wasn't WordPress because I switched to WordPress probably 4 months later. My focus immediately was like market, build a website, pitch a web. We need a website. And I still today, everything that I do is focused on like, can I get it on our site? Is all the info to sell us on our site so that there's one source to always like, when someone asks me a question, it's like, boom, it's on the site. When I'm training someone, it's like, look at our site. Like, it's all
sure
there. But we got orders from these other states. So I think the dynamic shifted to like me working on the website and Aaron was like printing them. And it was kind of fun because we were in our living room. It was a new thing. You could play music loud. We, you know, you could smoke in the house or whatever. Oh, like, yeah. It was, you know, it was the 60s. So it was like, it was good times. And
the 60s.
But like there were little things along the way. Like I remember the first time we mixed ink. Like we didn't have orange ink, for example, but we had an order that needed orange. And it was like, wait, you could combine red and yellow?
Right.
Like I knew that from like taking art classes like growing up and stuff. But like it was like, oh, we could actually mix this stuff around and like play with it. So yeah, we did that for, I don't know how long it was actually.
9 months to a year, somewhere in there. We just
printing in the living room.
Printing in the living room.
I know we made, to get into revenue real quick, I know we got up to just under $200,000.
Wow. It's just funny just thinking about it. I mean, we obviously never pushed past that manual phase.
Yeah.
But that was so similar. And just the, like, not knowing so much about everything.
Yeah.
And it's crazy now to think about it and then go back and just be like,
totally.
Holy crap. I mean, I didn't know anything about trade shows.
Oh, yeah.
I just burn shirts and, you know, Wild Wild West type of orders.
For
just,
sure.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We had a customer that had some real specific colors. We did a lot of water-based. Like, we started out water-based, and then we did a little bit of, like, a little bit of plastisol and kind of soy. We were doing soy inks.
Oh, yeah. We were, we're so eco-friendly. We do soy plastic.
But we had we had this customer.
I remember the first time that I printed with plastisol. I was like, this is great.
You're like, wow, this is so, it's so like,
this
easy.
This is so easy.
Yeah. But I didn't know what, like, Pantone colors were. Yeah. This is like after we moved into a warehouse and stuff. And
the one that you had up north?
Mm-hmm. The place that we moved into, we just started I think it was like 1,400 square feet. We got a really good deal. It was like under $600 for 1,400 square feet.
Wait, was this the one with the windows? Didn't have very good heat and everything?
We didn't even really have windows.
We didn't.
Glass windows?
There were big glass windows. And like some of them didn't open and some of them were stuck open. And like in some places it was like actually just missing a window. So in the winter, like there's some pictures of me during this period of time where I'm printing like with like a turtleneck on and then like a sweater over that, which is you'd never see in a print shop.
Yeah.
but because we didn't have heat. So, I mean, I guess technically we had heat, but it wasn't enough to like combat the like,
it's still
actual
wind coming in. Yeah, we were there. We were in the third floor. We moved on the third floor first, and we were there, I don't even know.
It was great for us.
At least a year and a half, maybe 2 years.
We outgrew the third floor, and then we went to the first floor, and then on the first floor, we ended up renting, you know, a unit next to us, and then eventually we rented the unit next to that and took the wall down. And so, I mean, we were able to really expand within that building.
Yeah.
Probably could have, I mean, I would still be there, honestly. I would go back now, which probably people think is fucking crazy, but like
crazy. I would not go back now.
It was tight.
It was really cheap rent, but like you get what you pay for.
Yeah, so. But I have some video footage where I look at like 2016 and I see like I think we had three automatic presses wedged into probably about 3,800 square feet.
Oh, yeah. Like, you had to, like, go sideways to walk through them.
I remember. Was, like, and then there was, like, boxes along the wall. And...
Most profitable print shop. Like, I look at that and I'm like, yes, it was tight. Yes, there were cockroaches in a bunch of the orders. Like, yes.
In the boxes?
No, we replaced
shirts. We barely had working plumbing.
It was...
But yeah, we had some... they didn't get sent out to the customers because we caught it. But we had some orders, like completed orders that like cockroaches were born in.
Dude.
Yeah. One time I moved a box and like there was just like a random rat nest in it for real. And a rat like it ran out. Yeah.
This is a true story. We had
crazy times.
We had a bean on top of Rachel's desk, right? We had like a coffee bean on her desk.
Just one.
So we had an exterminator out for the cockroaches. And the exterminator was there. And we're like, hey, this is a cockroach egg. And he's like, no, that's a coffee bean. And Rachel's like, no, I think this is a cockroach egg. So we're debating this with an exterminator. So then we take a knife and we cut it open and a little clear, like tiny baby cockroach runs out of it. We're like, I think you were wrong. You know, it's like,
yeah.
Did you have any idea that there was a baby cockroach in there? Or you just knew because of
No,
place
actually I did it a bunch of times after that to see, and none of them had ever came out. Like that was just like perfect.
But wow. But then to even get grosser in this story,
let's get real gross.
Let's go all full on gross. The exterminator was like, you know, I could kill these cockroaches, but they're actually coming out of that pipe in the corner of the room, which is like the sewage main. And you see how there's actual
like poop or something?
No, it was a sewage main to the building, but there was what's it called? Moss. There was moss growing on it because it was actually just like crumbling.
It looked pretty though. Like it was some greenery.
Moss growing on this old pipe, and there were like, you know, cockroaches coming out of it. So yeah.
That said, we went on a lot of like family vacations that year. Like I felt like it was I definitely look back.
We grew our business. It served
it was
a
purpose lean
at that time. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was also like, it was very stressful.
I remember one
time. Why? Because of how the growth and everything? Or
Yeah, the growth, the building. I think at that period of time, I personally was going from like a printer in a room to like a manager.
A people manager, sure.
And so there was just like, there's just a learning curve to that. And it just happened really quickly. And so I felt like I was just like trying to catch up on everything. And I also had kids. For a portion of that time, I was pregnant and printing. Mm. And then printing with a baby. And then, I mean, you know, you just wake up and do what you got to do. But I personally was very stressed out during that time. Also very good times. You know what I mean? Like it, hand in hand, like very good times. Like we had like a lot of people who worked at Barrel Maker, you know, that like,
how many people did you guys
have like true love and affection for? We got automatic presses and like that was very exciting. And we started teaching the screen printing experience.
Oh yeah.
Which was exciting.
You guys have a great photo back in there whenever you walk in where it's like you with like longer, more punk rock hair and everything. And
yeah.
I always see that cause it's the first thing you see when you go into the bathroom now.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Oh really? Which one is it?
It's just, that's in our apartment. It's like,
oh okay.
It's like,
it's like in your new facility.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The
That was in our apartment. Yeah. Our neighbor took photos sometimes and she had like a nice camera, so we had her come and take a whole bunch of photos of our
I forgot that was her.
Wait, with that, how many people were in that space too? And you said three presses
probably
too?
18. I think it was about 18.
So it's just a lot of like growing.
A lot of growing.
Yeah, we also had a really solid internship program. So, yeah, like...
What does that mean?
We had, like, 4 to 6 interns from the Art Institute all the time. So we had, like, free... Basically, at one point... Okay, so we started getting interns way before we could even, like, keep... Like, I reached out to the Art Institute, like, early on and started getting us interns. But then I think there's this realization where, like, oh, wait, we should be utilizing interns, like... pull shirts because we had some big orders. Like we had like a couple 60,000-70,000 piece orders that are like double sided and things like that. So we had a lot of work to do. So there were definitely jobs where you just needed someone to kind of like, you know, sort of like unskilled labor. Mm-hmm. So we got as many interns as we could from the Art Institute, which I think at one point was like six, which is great. Yeah. We had like a ton of interns.
At one time?
I don't know.
I don't think at one time. Maybe I think we had like two or three at
free
one
labor.
Time.
But... Well, and then we also had that program with the dude who came from the other country to like learn.
An exchange student?
Kind of, but he like won. It was some sort of thing where he has a print shop. I introduced you to him, actually.
Oh,
and I
yes.
think you might
He's
have blown
in
him
South
off.
America, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was kind of interesting. That was in 2016.
I remember that.
It was during the Cubs, like, winning the World Series.
Yeah.
And he was there the few weeks prior. And before the Cubs won the World Series, like, we did tons of, like, big runs for, like, ad campaigns for the Cubs and whatnot. So it was just so busy and, like... Yeah, it was cool though. Like he was really helpful, and he learned a lot. And he was able
where did the growth all come from?
You know, I credit
ad? Was the banner
no,
ad?
No, that just that got was... us started. You know, I credit like Justin for really like driving sales.
Uh-huh.
And I think Justin needs to stay at the computer. Like that's where he needs to be for our business to like survive. Like, or to, because he always has, you know, he's really good at sales. He has like a natural, I don't know, is it flair? You have a flair for
it?
I got some flair.
Is it like a coattail type?
Yeah, it's like a top hat and cane type deal. No, but also like, I don't know, he was good at seeing what worked and like sticking with it.
Uh-huh.
And he also, sometimes to like my, you know, maybe detriment or it would make me angry. Sometimes he was like, no, like I'm going to get the order and I just want it handled. Like, yeah. I just want it handled. He's just always said yes. He never turned down an order.
Which just helped really grow in the referrals.
Well, I just it a discipline to market every single day. I do it now. I mean, every day I operate as though like we're going out of business. And I genuinely feel that way. Like, it's not like I'm, like, like, I legit always think that having, that, I think it's, like, a fragile, fine line between, like, doing really well and, like, living on the streets homeless, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, like, I think that's a mentality where, like, just...
Have you always had that since you guys started it,
then?
Yeah,
because I was on unemployment when we started the business. I got my job back, but... When we decided to do this, I was all in. You know, this is like what I want to do. So it's important to me to like be able to have constant revenue. Like we function so much better as a shop if we have money coming in. You know, I mean, money does like solve like, you know, orders that get messed up. It solves like a lot of problems because you can buy the things that you need to operate.
Yeah, the trick is to like... continue operating smoothly even when money is coming in, because there's a lull between money coming in on the front end and the chaos that ensues on the back end, right? Because of like turnaround times and just the nature of the screen printing process itself. So like Justin, there will be days like this was a challenge I think for us, like on a more personal level, like he's feeling really good because he's managing the money and taking the orders, and I'm feeling like crazy, chaotic, stressed,
managing
the back end, trying to get it all done. And so it's kind of like one person's stress kind of ruins the other person's good time, like over and over again. Cause like when I was feeling good, you know, on the back end is when he's really stressed on the front end, cause he doesn't feel like there's enough orders. And I'm like, I got my schedule done today, you know?
Yeah.
So
that
dynamic was really challenging then.
That lag is still hard because you'll like I'll have a couple days where I'm like, man, we're just slow, like we're not doing that good, and then you go into production and they're super busy and they're overwhelmed. But it's like those like two bad days that we just had, like that hasn't hit them yet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And also like when you're trying to make like changes, like coming from the front end, from the way information in particular, the way information flows from the front end to the back end, you have to continually remind your employees, like, I know we just made this change, but you're not going to see that made until a week from now, right? Because the orders that you're looking at today or you're going to look at tomorrow after this change was made were, you know, they took place at a time when we hadn't discussed this issue yet. So managing just like people's frustration with one another, sure. Sometimes that lag, you have to constantly remind
people. How would you, you know, having go through a lot of that growth, and now you guys are in a fairly new facility, pretty big space, more people and orders and all that. But if you were to go back, especially on the production side, to give somebody advice that's maybe just starting to ramp up the sales and orders are starting to get chaotic, what would you tell them?
This is something that like we still struggle with on and off, but like it's really, really, we were just talking about this on the way here actually. The one thing that you really need to remain profitable, you need somebody on your floor who is only trying to get orders out the door. That's it. That's all they're doing. So every action that they take during the day is to remove an obstacle to get the order out, right? So if they come onto the floor and they see just like the orders mismatched to presses, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, your manual printer is, you know, lackadaisically, that's the word, you know, printing these 500 things and your 12 color press is doing a like 7 or 8 or 10 color, you know, 30 shirt order, and they're trying to get the pink right or something. Like these are like, you need somebody who's going to look at that and say, how am I going to get the most done out of the situation? How am I going to get the most things boxed up?
Is that the production manager?
Or it can be the production manager, but the production manager can be pulled in like 1 trillion directions, mm-hmm. right? It's just the nature of the beast. Like they can be bogged down by every single detail that's not working for every single person in your shop. And they just can't. They have to be the one that's saying, switch these orders, you have an empty print head and your color's being tweaked, let's throw this order up there, these 350 shirts done this hour, I want to get this done, you know, they need somebody to just rearrange people constantly, orders constantly, to make sure that they're on the dock. And if, you know, just like somebody that's driving momentum. Because, I mean,
it feels like a very undervalued role because a lot of shops don't invest in that.
I don't know how you
identify that person. It has to be the right person. Yeah.
So there's...
It's difficult. We've struggled with it on and off.
Yeah.
The whole time. I mean...
I would say, like, my biggest flaw, like, personality flaw or, like, trait would be that I spot those things and... Like, I spot them right away, which is great, and that's a positive thing. But I then resent the fact that no one else spotted it, and I just get annoyed, and I'll, like, call Aaron and be like, dude, could you believe what's happening here? Like, this person's doing this, sure. and this person's doing this, and why didn't anyone else just realize that, like, if we move this here, it would just be done in 20 minutes, and then they could go back to their lives and stuff. And as opposed to, like, me going out and, like, just being, like, addressing it myself and like fixing it or trying to train other people to do it, I like just resent the fact that no one else caught it, and I'm like, why did I have to catch it and get the order that did it or whatever, sure. you know? And so I'm trying to get better at that. Like, I'm trying to actually be aware that, like, hey, like, if I want the shop to grow, like, I need to, like, not be so judgy, I need to be as helpful as I can.
You shift that, because I'm sure there's other people that feel the same way.
Yeah,
especially as being an owner, like, you're always in it, and so there's that transition of the business where you don't.
I think the hardest thing is there's so many people that give the same advice, which is like, you know, like hire quickly, fire quickly, you know. And I think that, like, I think the fire quickly is something that, like, I don't really know anyone who's like really, really good at it. But it's so important. I would say we're absolutely terrible at it. I would put us at, like, we're the worst.
Yeah.
Like, we're so bad at
firing. Well, I'm sure you'd be just a complete jerk, though.
Dude, but... thanks. But, like,
if you were, really, like, really... I mean, imagine somebody who was
I think that's the solution, though. I think, like, if we cycled through more people quicker, we would identify those people who... Because when you have, let's say, like, a worker.
But we can you just truly identify it, or do you view it as like, ah, they messed up, you know, or like
so, sometimes?
I don't know. It's difficult. Like, I don't know. And I always really like personally close to people who I work next to.
Yeah.
So I typically want to always give people the benefit of the doubt. And sometimes that hasn't worked to my benefit and sometimes it has. And it's really, really hard, you know, but I don't know. I would say that like I had a really hard time, still have a really hard time with the idea of just like cutting people loose when they make a mistake and kind of like, you know, like being that like capitalist machine that just wants to spin. Yeah. And, you know, I don't want like to own a business that's going to just grind people up and spit them out. Like that's not ever who I wanted Barrel Maker to be. And then there's the other side of that where it's like Barrel Maker won't exist if it, you know, if people aren't working.
Sure.
So yeah. It's finding a balance between, you know, that kind of like in our generation and maybe in the millennial generation, there's this whole thing of like, this is, you know, your second home and we're all a family here. And this kind of like rhetoric that comes along with maybe like startups or, you know, businesses like, you know, we want everybody to get along and we're just family here. We're like family. And like you want a balance between that and like you have to get shit done quickly or we're not gonna like turn a profit, and we have to turn a profit if we want to feed all of ourselves. That's what I think that Barrel Maker strives to do, is like to try to find that balance, but it's shifting all the time, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
And, like, so you recommend just really finding that,
you gotta,
that person,
you have to find the person,
force the orders through and get things done.
I think if you have that person, you're good. You know, I mean, I really think that's like, I don't feel like we necessarily have that person right now. It's something that's lacking, you know, but I think that that's what keeps a shop like well balanced and like moving along.
And it depends, you know, I feel like each shop is structured like a little bit differently because it really is built by the people that kind of work there. And you have to be able to see people's skill sets, you know,
sure.
And a lot of times we'll hire people for one thing, but their skill set, you know, will be actually something else. And we're like, well, you should do this other thing. So you know, this is what you're really good at. And you kind of, I don't know. So we've kind of like plugged holes in our production area, like that way, having one person, just even a time of day, you know, like if you want to get your schedule done, there are chances that you need to like shuffle it up like midday are strong. Like, you know, cause people have good days, people have bad days, orders get pulled off press, you know, yada, yada, yada. And you need somebody there who says, okay, so all this stuff just happened. How am I still going to get the most out of this day?
Right. Crazy balance of personalities and the customization.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I think something else like in our industry that's kind of challenging is you have to be open to the fact that people aren't going to be here forever. You know what I mean? Like so this is like my career, right? Like I own this business. Like mm-hmm. I have no intentions of going anywhere else. But like,
but it could be like a stop.
Yeah, you have to realize that like if you have somebody in, you know, a certain position where they're, you know, you only have so much money that you could pay certain roles or that you're paying people to. And a lot of people take jobs because like, you know, okay, they need to pay their bills and whatnot. But like bigger picture, they want to do, you know, something totally different than working like a print shop. So,
sure.
You know, you could have really great people who work there, but you also like sort of have to like plan a sort of structure around the fact that like maybe in 2 years, this person's going to leave and now someone else is going to fill this role, you know? So you're kind of always looking at like, how do we just keep the shop like, you know, on track, like functioning well, like developing. I think it's really crucial to have like SOPs and systems in place so that like if somebody new comes along, there's like a method for doing it, and it's not, you're not totally dependent on, you know, well, Bruce does this, but if someone else comes in, we don't know what they're gonna do, you know, like you have to know.
Do you feel like you're at a spot, or how far do you feel like you're at a spot where things can help run? Because you mentioned like you don't know if you have that crucial role there just yet.
Uh-huh.
Does that mean that you just have to be more hands-on still?
To me, I think it just means we're less profitable and have to be more hands-on. It means that, like, I'm pulled away from my ability to market. And, like, there's a real correlation between how much time I spend at a computer and how much money we make.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
Because of the marketing activities?
Yeah.
Just emailing customers?
Yeah, following up with customers, talking to customers, reaching out to new customers, placing, you know, ads, AdWords, just...
So literally every time, the total amount of time that you're not spending on that is almost like strangles the...
Yeah, I think so, really yeah. And I don't and want
the,
it to.
The one thing that I think, like, it's a simple thing, but that Justin always said from the beginning, like, is when I get an email, I want to be the first person that emails them back. Like, he's very, 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 very prompt. And I think sometimes it's hard if you're pulled away because I know that you're not leaving your computer until your inbox is like taken care of.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's like a big statement, you know, it's a big thing to do like every single day. Like,
I mean, that's huge though. It's huge. Just even thinking about we had some work done in our house from this like water problems, but we had messaged so many different people and contractor and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But the people who responded first was almost always a person who I'd go with because yeah. I think it also showed to me that I was like, oh, they're on it. Like, they're not on
it.
Business.
They want it.
But it was surprising how many responses I'd get like days after.
Yeah.
Oh, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I actually had a couple, maybe this like last like few weeks, cause it's been like with COVID and stuff too, like we've been like shorter staffed. And like, so I've had to help in a lot more areas. And there's a couple emails that I did respond to where like we ended up losing the order because like we had a couple responses and then there were like days that passed and then it was like, oh shit, like we missed 2 days and they followed up, you know, a couple times and then we wrote back and they're like, oh, I went with somebody else, you mm-hmm. know? And that happened to me twice, like in this
last month.
So it's
just like responding and follow up and like
it just reiterates, like, I think like the most, I just always have the mindset of someone emails us that they've also emailed other print shops. So if we're the first one to respond, not only I always say if we're the first one to respond, we'll get it because we also have a website that shows that we're like valid and can support
reviews
it. And like our responses will be like accurate. We can link to things, like we'll do a good job. So we just need to get that.
Well, that fast response is definitely a value add.
It's really,
it's not that common for businesses.
And no, it's actually, hard. It's hard to maintain. Sounds simple, but it's not easy to do because
it's easy for a month.
Yeah.
But it's not for like 10 years.
No, right. Especially like you could be super busy, you know, so like we don't have a big office staff and everybody's like doing other things. So we're writing up orders and like, you know, Printavo doesn't have like a quick way to like create, you know, invoices and whatnot. So it's like we're all working twice as hard as we need to. And, and so then all of a sudden we miss some of those. The other thing that I do, which really helps me too, is I can't know our schedule. And if people try and talk to me about our production schedule, I really try and say like, I don't want to know the schedule. I don't want to know if we're busy. I don't want to know like
just
if this person's behind. I don't want to know if we're 3 weeks behind because I'm still going to say like 7 to 10 business days. I need to like stick to our thing and I need to always assume that we're not busy.
Sure.
And that's how I operate. And I have, we were just talking about Rachel, but like Rachel has the ability to sub out. We have a couple of print shops that we work with continuously. So when we hit our capacity, they get the orders. And it took a while for me to be okay with subbing out more and more.
Why?
Just because I felt like our whole business is like we're a print shop. We should do all of it. But we can't service our customers effectively when we get behind. So at a certain threshold, we need to like be able to maintain our turnaround. And we've done a good job. Actually, like at the place now, we bring a lot of our screens too. Like it's just part of having like lower rates. We like bring orders to another print shop with the screens, with the mock-ups.
Oh, really?
Like,
what are you? Are you shipping the screens or are they just
nearby? We drive it. Oh, it's local. So, and the quality
is good. It's
important
to be a good contract customer because when, you know, like, we've been on the other end of that when people want to be contract customers, but they're not providing art. They're not, you know,
Yeah.
They're not like keeping up their end of the deal to like get those lower rates. Like, so, I mean, I think it's important to like,
I think we're a really good, contract customer. We're like, yeah. We do the SEPs, so we do the screen, like we do all of it. If something's wrong, we'll take the blame for it. Like if there's spoilage or issues, we know it happens. Like
sure.
We're, you know, picky about that. But yeah, it's just, for me to be able to like push, I don't want it. Like if I know that we're like killing it, I'm not gonna feel motivated to like go out and get a new ice cream parlor that opened or something, you know. So but that said, like,
I thought you said, when you said get a new ice cream parlor, I thought you meant like
buy one.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a little sick of screen printing. We should get into ice cream. I want to get into I'm like obsessed with motorcycles right now.
I see.
Yeah, I need someone else to do that. Are you going to do it?
Do what?
Ride motorcycles with me. Because that's like my, I feel like that's where I want to go.
I don't know, maybe.
And what's your deal? Are you, you're scared?
Of motorcycles?
Yeah.
I mean, I was going to get the license and then I just thought about it. And I mean,
you can't think about it because you're just like, I'm going
to
fly off.
I mean, from everybody I talk to, it's just like a timing thing of like when you get in the accident. And I was like, I'd rather do other stuff.
I don't know if I believe in that anymore now that I'm like in it.
But I don't think it's necessarily you driving. I think you could be the best driver. I think it's also other people.
It's other people.
Yeah. And road conditions that can't be controlled either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was like, I remember reading the news, it was just like oil slick and you know, you didn't see it or whatever, or slipped out. And like oil slick on the highway.
What?
Oil slick?
Shit. I got an airbag. Did I tell you? Like, did I show that to you?
It's
like a vest, and if I fall, it'll like inflate.
Yeah.
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 I want to try that. Yeah. You don't think
Aaron's nervous?
I don't know. I feel like, especially since I think I got more nervous when you rigged up the speakers inside your helmet. Yeah. I just feel like you're going to be like listening to podcasts or
I am.
You're listening to the Print Hustlers podcast.
Yeah. Or like,
you're like, what did Jared say?
Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like it's less focused. And I mean, you've got a lot of qualities, but you're not the most focused like guy.
But it's really, I really like listening to like podcasts and music and zoning out.
While driving?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I like
it's in my helmet. While driving, yeah. Like
I guess you can't hear anyway, like over the motorcycle.
Yeah, what do you
like? You're
to
not
hear?
Using your sense of hearing to stay alive on a motorcycle. So I guess there's that, but like, it's also distracting your cognitive.
I mean, it looks
functions.
Badass though.
It looks cool. Yeah. Yeah, I burnt all my taste buds off last night with like hot soup.
While on a motorcycle? Or?
No, just unrelated.
Yeah,
that
I was like, and you're eating soup.
Yeah.
Like, you're dead.
Wait,
you're
so
dead.
What is the
Denso.
Speaking of this, eating in the car, I always think about that time when we stopped at Whole Foods and I ate like a whole pie with my hands like while driving, and you were just like, I'm so disgusted.
Yeah,
with your hands, bare hands.
Just bare hands.
Did you sanitize before? You're gonna need to
it
never
was pre-COVID.
Do that before.
Oh, okay, that's
you
fine.
You never do that again around me. Just that will be the last time that I experience this. Are we clear?
Really, I just wanted to like enjoy it. Like, it just made me feel so much shame. We had a raccoon eat one of our chickens, like, maybe a couple months ago, and it ran up into the tree. And Erin comes running outside, and she starts yelling at the raccoon. She's like, "You should be ashamed of yourself." She's like lecturing the raccoon. The raccoon's just like, "Okay, I just want to eat the chicken." Yeah,
just leave me
alone.
I don't think
it felt bad at all. I think it just wanted you to leave.
Probably just looked and then ran away.
Yeah, the same raccoon came back. I mean, I'm assuming it was the same raccoon. I guess I don't really know them apart. But like the next day came back and I was spraying it in the face with a hose trying to get it like out of my yard because I don't want it to eat my chickens. And it just like was not fazed. I mean, I had like just 10 feet away, the hose was on like the highest setting,
and,
it's just right in the face. I mean, it didn't even blink.
This is probably the cleanest shower it's had.
Yeah, people think raccoons are like really like cute. Oh, they're so
cute.
What
are the chickens, like more of a pet or is it for
would say they're pets eggs. At this point.
They lay eggs.
Okay.
I enjoy giving them a good life because I feel like the world really treats chickens like shit. Like
that's fair.
I just kind of enjoy like giving them a really good chicken life. So they like they run around. They like try to fly. They scratch in the dirt. They do all sorts of chicken things.
Yeah, they have a good life for sure.
Yeah.
Except when the occasional raccoon comes.
Yeah.
Out. Yeah.
I built a new coop.
We have a really nice coop.
Raccoon
she got these like architecture plans and then had a contractor come and do it. I for real after it was built was like, wait, before the chickens go in there, why don't we dig out like a hot tub in here and like this can be really
jacuzzi,
nice. Yeah, because
jets
it's cool.
go on at 10 p.m. to 2 a.m.
Do you ever watch those videos with the guys who dig the pools with like the stick?
The stick.
They use like a little stick or something, right?
Oh
like,
no,
in
I
the
didn't
jungle?
See that. Oh, were they like fast forward and time lapse their own?
Yeah, yeah, they dig out.
Yeah,
crazy
and it looks like
pools,
unbelievable like, at the end.
Dude, those guys would be the best in a print shop. Think about like
of the getting shit done guys.
Just getting shit done.
Yeah.
Those guys work hard.
How do you guys balance? A lot of shops are also family owned, husband, wife, or brothers, father, son, something like that. How do you guys like balance that? I mean, obviously, you know, you're taking care of the front, you're taking care of the back, but as you mentioned, it's like those things are just getting tossed and you just want things done on that side.
We stopped working together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the new facility or in the...
In the new one. Yeah, we did it for many years, but it's just like...
It's just hard to...
It's really hard to balance. I mean, I'd say that like... when we did it like semi-successfully, we had like a hard line of there's no work talk at home, right? Because also, you know, when you have small children like in the mix as well, you don't want to be like, you know, fighting over shipping costs, you know, while your
can
kids
you
are like,
UPS?
Can you read right. to me? You know, and
yeah.
you're like, I mean, that's a literal situation. Can you, you know, children like, you know, they need like, pretty much undivided attention.
Like nonstop.
Sure.
So, but that's really hard, you know, because like there were a lot of days where we would come home like angry at each other. So like having to just like compartmentalize that and be like, okay, so now I have to be like, you know, now it's like bath time, bedtime, blah, 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 you know.
That was a lot just from the growth of the shop and,
yeah, from the growth of the shop. And I mean, like, I don't know, there's just shit that happens. Like Justin would take like an order that like I actually didn't think it was like financially feasible, or it was like something new and we didn't have time, or you know, like something like that, and I would be really frustrated, right, that he like put me in that position. Mm-hmm. And then that would flip, or maybe, you know, I made a mistake on the floor and we lost some money, and so then Justin would be angry at me, and you have to find a way to like not make it about that other person like personally.
Sure.
But it's hard. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's really
and
hard.
We had a dynamic that I think a lot of the print shops that I know that have like husband and wives who like work together, it seems like a lot of them, the wife, and I might be wrong, but the ones that I've met, it seems like the wife's normally like on sort of the office side or like an art side or something like that's not directly in, I guess, like competition a little bit. And like we had a dynamic that was really hard because like my job is to, you know, take the orders and work with the customers, and then Aaron's running production. So obviously when there's like an issue in production that happens, it's like, and now I'm getting yelled at by a customer, it's like, well, I'm getting yelled at, I gotta work it out with her. And it's like, it just creates like a really tough dynamic versus like if we were both on the office side and had a separate production manager or something, I think it would be a different story. But like there is like a lot of headbutting between, I think in any print shop, you have like your office and production dynamic that's just kind of a little bit hard to work within. So,
yeah. And I tried a few times. I tried to actually step out of the production management like role a few times, and just would do like various like office thingies, administrative things, HR, whatever. But like, to be honest, my skill set's like on my feet. I'm not like
just very operational.
I'm just kind of a mover. So I don't even think well unless I'm like
You're not like a solid like person to email. You're not even easy to get a hold of with a phone. Like you're like out there living your life.
Yeah, I'm just a mover and a shaker. So like things would come up that like I knew like I was the right person to handle it. So like even, you know, like I just always kind of like oozed into that role of like this thing came up and I know how to handle it, and I just, and rather than like try to explain it to somebody else while I'm just sitting at a desk, you know, I'm just gonna go do it. And so it's difficult, and there's like, I don't think either of us are without like feelings about it, you know what I mean?
But, well, I feel like you still, I mean, you're still, it's not like you're not involved, so like you've done a lot of live events this last year, like when there's, we still work together on like, at least now I could come home and talk things through with you too. I could come home and be like, hey, this thing happened, and you'll give me like feedback on it, or like it, we could like talk about the business together now, and there's not like animosity. Like we definitely don't always agree still, which is, I think it's good. I think it's fine, but we don't fight over it, which is good. Yeah. There's not like feelings attached to it, and I think that actually makes
it a lot
easier.
So it was like the right move to.
It was. I mean, for a long time, and still I'm a little bit like, you know, like fuck the patriarchy. Like, mm-hmm. why do I have to leave my job and my business mm-hmm. to, you know, but like.
Well, the kids don't even like me. So
yeah. That's, yeah, that's but, I mean, right? There's a reason like, why. You know
what I mean? He comes home with ink all over.
Right.
So they're like, but I think like I've grown to accept that it actually like in our relationship, in this relationship that I'm in, it was the right move. Although I get a little bored, to be honest. So I'll probably, I don't know, maybe I'll start a new career.
I'm going to start a print shop.
I'm going to start a print shop.
You should start a software.
I'm going to start Barrel Monkey.
Barrel Monkey
printing.
Yeah.
Across the street.
We could sub out work to you.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for the leg up.
Yeah. I mean, is that, you know, I don't know if live printing at some point is a thing. Is that, you think, an opportunity then where it's more separated?
Yeah. I mean, I've done some like live events. I'm getting a little old for the live events. Just like physically, it's really like a lot.
You were at our wedding.
Yeah. I live printed your wedding.
you were actually there.
Yeah.
So for listeners, we had our wedding.
We had a wedding.
A little bit more than a year ago.
Those but Print Hustler 4.
No, it's actually right after Print Hustler's Conf that year. But anyway, we have definitely wanted live printing.
I got really good feedback about your wedding too. Like, or not, like, kind of funny feedback where I think Aaron and was it Annie? We're saying, like, there are a few people in your family who were like, wait, so, like, is this Printavo? Like, printing?
Yeah.
This is why I don't explain
it. There were a lot of Printavo jokes, like, during
the
reception.
There was a shocking amount of Printavo jokes at the wedding. I was like,
you're like, oh, God.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't think anybody's signing up here.
I think your brother also made the Print Hustlers joke.
Like, really?
His speech or something similar.
Yeah, I think like, there was a fair amount of them.
Like, thank you for coming to Printavo's.
Somebody should have said for everybody to sign up.
Yeah.
Oh, everybody open up your phones.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, but so we had live printing. It was awesome. But when I went over there, I was like, Aaron's here?
Yeah.
And then you were just knocking them out, but people, I mean, you guys know, like, people love seeing it, right? But,
it's great.
They love the shirts. They're like, everybody I still see wearing the All Made shirts because they're like, this is the best shirt. How would you get them? You know,
the All Made shirts really, like, they really stand up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, everybody, like, you know, because we print shirts for, like, people in our community, and almost every time it's on an All Made shirt. Like, they're like, I love this shirt. So comfortable. Mm-hmm. Like, it fits me just right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I think that with live printing, it's like really important to use like good products.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you're there, like, associated with it. So
right.
It's like,
you're touching you it. You want it. Right there and see, yeah.
Yeah.
But so you just, because you would want to be there to try to manage with the live events if that was like a division that you feel like you would take on.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Live?
So the live events run on like a shoestring budget usually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's a lot of like flying in, like unpacking a FedEx truck, you know, like or going to get stuff at a like location it's been shipped to previously, like a storage center, like putting it in your truck, going to the event, working the event, packing it all back up, going back to the storage facility or going to FedEx. I mean, it's like very, very, very labor intensive.
Right.
So.
And you need like an actual manager of some
sort.
You need.
Yeah. I mean, so a lot of the live printing events that happen successfully are you have one person who can print, lift things, pack things up really quickly, put a press together. I mean, it's like, so I feel like I'm too old for that. Well, but maybe not. I mean, I've done it before. I could do it. Like, but like there's been a couple times where like I threw my back out and now it's terrible. And usually you're flying back the same day.
Yeah.
So it's like a lot. It's like the worst 10 or 11 hours. This is a terrible plug for live printing. It's not that bad. It's fun for like the right person, you know.
There's a lot of managing it because we have to equipment all over the country and then we have, let's say, like if we're doing 30 events in a month, most of those are weekends, so now you have multiple events within the same day in, you know, various like cities.
It's
so a lot of it is like we have a Trello board that's broken up where it's like where the equipment is actually going from event to event.
Sure.
Like, or like, okay, wait, like we have something in Washington, D.C. and then something like in Atlanta, but then we can get it back to D.C. or we're going to leave it here. You know, so we end up like a lot of it really is just figure out the best way to leave equipment and then also make sure that when you go in, like, so if we fly into an event or like a big thing that we have a whole affiliate program, so we work with a lot of other print shops. But if they're using our equipment, we need to make sure that like, hey, when this event happened 2 weeks ago and everything got packed up again, was it done properly, or are they going to get to the event and realize half their shit's broken an hour before the event starts when there's already people lined up being like, I want my shit. It's pretty high stress. I like to think of live printing as like high intensity screen printing or something. Like it's like,
yeah, it's kind of like a reality TV show almost. Like you get there, the squeegees are missing. How do you find squeegees in the next hour?
Use cardboard.
You get there and all of the bolts are just like loose in the bottom of the box and you have to like assemble more of the press than you thought you would. You get there and your screen clamp is bent and you have to find a rubber mallet and bang it back to the place.
It's not fun.
These are all actual things that are happening.
It's really, it's really stressful situation.
And then you have to print, you know, and then you have like 2 hours to print 400 shirts. So there's also that part of it.
That's the fun part, though, when you have the big line and you're just like, I can't look up. And then 2 hours later, you're like, shit, I did it.
You're printing like a banshee. And then you, so, I mean, it is fun sometimes, and then sometimes you just like want to cry.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's a different business. I mean, it would be like somebody going into just running a normal shop, and they'd say, "Holy crap! There's that, you know, this happened."
And it's, we don't real market heavy on the live
printing
side,
when we, so our, we have a separate site for live printing, and we treat it very different. So like when we do a live event, first of all, a lot of them, like probably 2/3 of what we do is white label. So like it's not Barrel Maker, it's not liveprinting.com. It's just sort of like the brand, you know? So so that's part of it. But then if we are pitching a service at all we're marketing is live printing. So we don't try and like live print at events to get custom shirt orders. It's like, it's just, we leave it as live.
Yeah, it's definitely underestimated. Which is why I was excited when Max did that talk about how he's really scaled it, because he's done some crazy number year.
Yeah. Who is that?
Max at Family Industries.
I'll look him up.
JK.
That's cool. I think I'm still really bummed at like not having live events. I mean, that was the hardest part when COVID started, was we had to refund a lot of money because we never had to refund events up until that. And then we had the month that was booked I guess that would be like March and maybe like April. That's when we started having events where it was like, oh, whoa, this is like just not happening. But I remember the very first one, we had one for like Microsoft in Seattle that got canceled. And we're like, holy shit, like really? They canceled that for like COVID? This is like early March. Sure. But then they all started trickling in. So I feel confident it's going to come back really strong. I think that when events other than like Trump rallies continue, I think that I think people want to go out. People want to get back into like living their lives and lifestyle. I think it will come back, and I think it will come back strong. So
what do you feel like is the end goal? Have you ever thought about like an end goal, or is it more of, I want to be you? Okay. So what is it?
Well, I mean,
or is it, cause you also talked about being very profitable. I think you guys mentioned that, which shops don't necessarily, I think they think about it more now with profit first and all that, which is awesome.
Yeah.
But a lot of business books also though talk about that.
I would say right now we're not at a very good profitable place in our career. Like we're less profitable now than we were obviously a year ago. And I attribute everything right now to just COVID. We're down over last year. Like I'm okay with like losing some money. I just personally want to get to like
make it through.
Yeah, I want to get to like next April, May, and then if shit's still a mess, that's gonna be a problem. But I'm hoping like that's sort of what I'm looking at is like, okay, we're gonna get through. And I mean, we've had killer days, so it's weird. Like we've still had a few like random, you know, $30,000-$40,000 days, but we're having days in between where it's like $2,000-$3,000 where it's just like, wait, what? Like that's really low. Like we need to do better than that. So it's hard. Anyways, in terms of, I think, goals, like I switch because sometimes I'm like, you know, I have a good setup going now. Like I don't get as stressed out as I used to. So like, I feel like my quality of life's okay. Like I could pay my bills. Like I have an okay income. Like I'm like fine with that part. So I'm like, I could ride this out. I could and should ride this out as long as I can. But then there's other times too where it's just like, I don't know. Like, do I want to do something else with my life? Should I try and sell? Should I try and consolidate? I've thought a lot about, ideally, I think a really good scenario for a print shop would be consolidating with other print shops. So like, for example, like I think it would be a really good play to reach out to like maybe three other shops that do similar volume and say like, hey, we're gonna, like, why don't we all partner up and use one production facility, like minimize like our expenses, our overhead, all that, and like basically all advertising and order processing. And, you know, I think that type of model would give like really good growth. You know,
so do you think 20 years, I mean,
yeah,
have you thought about it enough to say, hey, I want to try to make this just as profitable of a business as possible? Or is it like you said,
yeah,
you know, I'm not sure this is what we want to be doing, or is it just, well, more of the focus now,
it's as long as we can ride it out too. Like technology is changing. Print on demand is going to become more and more of a thing. So we have to stay current with like being able, like we do fulfillment, but we don't have any sort of like revolutionary like software that's going to connect us to like, you know, brands who are selling print on demand and things like that. So I think like we need to figure out at some point, like, hey, how do we stay current with the technology and how the industry is going? Partner with someone who's current, or just accept that at some point, you know, that we're gonna stop growing and have a decline because there's gonna be more innovative companies that come along. So I mean, I sometimes think about that, just, you know, there is gonna be a change in like technology and how that stuff goes, and and that model changes too. Right now I just kind of look at, my focus personally is like coasting a little bit, getting us through this like next like year or so where it's a little bit harder. I want to keep spending time on live printing and how we could grow that and improve it for when it does come back. I could personally see myself wanting to just dedicate myself to the live events and growing that side of the business, and looking for some sort of partnership or something for Barrelmaker and for like custom printing, because I think we could benefit a lot from a strategic partnership versus trying to create a new model or something that maybe isn't going to be our strong point.
Yeah, it's interesting. Do you have any, I mean, obviously now having sort of separated a little bit from the day-to-day piece of it. But do you have any thoughts as far as where you think? I mean, it's a weird thought, right? Of like end goal. What is the end goal of the business? You don't really know.
Yeah, I don't really know. I mean,
or maybe it's more of a question of what you want from it.
Any like screen printing based like custom print shop is going to need to evolve in the next, you know, 5 to 10 years, like pretty quickly. And yeah, I mean, it remains to be said like what we're going to do to kind of like grow as the industry's growing and to remain like, I don't want to even say remain viable, because like nobody, you know, that's not a very exciting response. You know, no business owner is like, I just want to remain viable. You know, you want to like, you want to offer your customers like an exciting option, or really find a niche where you're, you know, you can do something, you know, a little better than your competitors, or you're focusing on something different, a different experience for customers. So, I mean, all of that kind of remains to be seen. Barrel Maker definitely can thrive in that space. But it's just, I mean, I think it's just a matter of
how much you want to put into it. Yeah, I mean, it, and skill set. Like, there's stuff that, like, want to see change and I'd love to be able to do, and I could draw, like, a, you know, like a diagram or like a flow chart of like how something I'd like to see the transition to how we process like reorders and give the customers a new experience, right? Like things like that. But like, do I then also have the resource to get like you know, a tech team with like developers and all that to be able to do that? Do I have the money to do it? Like, I don't even know where to start. And then would I have the energy to do that to like micromanage all that? So sometimes it's also just being like, yeah, I mean, there's tons of stuff I want to do, but do like, I could think about that, or I could just go ride around on the motorcycle and like zone out. Like, I think right now listening to the
podcast.
Yeah.
Mentioned the digital stuff.
Yeah.
Print on demand. Is that where you think things are headed?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we're getting into it a little bit now. I mean, we definitely do a decent amount of fulfillment, but we don't do, like, we don't really do, like, print-on-demand, but we kind of lightly offer it here and there, like, with DTGs. And even, we had a customer about a year ago where we kind of did print-on-demand screen printing. It was all one-color prints. So we, like, dabbled that way. And I definitely think that's the model, because people don't want to pre-buy a bunch of overhead. People don't want to invest in necessarily, like, a limited amount of designs. They still want to be able to offer it. And then on the end side, we have a whole culture that's used to, like, Amazon and wanting stuff quickly. We struggle with this, but I'm personally of the mindset that if you get something next day, you're going to be happier than if you get something 2 weeks later, even if it's nicer. I think people want shit quick. Mm-hmm. So it's like, how do we balance that? Especially like Barrel Maker is one thing that's kind of interesting, is we haven't really changed as a company since we started. Like at the very, very beginning, I found like a magnet that we made or something where we were like, it was like a fridge magnet. And it's like, you know, basically like our shtick, like kind of at the beginning and now, is the same, which is like, we promote like as eco-friendly materials as we can. So like that shifted a little bit, like our blanks, like, we, you know, primarily work with like All Made or Royal Apparel or things that are like, you know, hemp or organic cotton and stuff like that. We use a ton of water-based
recycled
inks.
Polyester.
We try our best to be a good sustainable company, but that's not, and Aaron's like a huge integral part of this, is like from the very beginning, our goal has been like, you have to do those things as a company because it's the right thing to do, but that's not how you should necessarily focus your marketing. Like, we don't need to be like, oh, we're organic, so everything's going to be like granola, you know, tan and like, you know, super eco green printing or whatever. It's like, no, like, we're going to print with like these ink types or these products or utilize these materials or act a certain way because it's the right thing to do. You know, it's ethical. It's just like the right thing to do. And so it's sort of interesting because we haven't really wavered from that. So it's also like, how do we maintain some of those values and then also grow towards, you know, just other directions, right?
Sure.
But I'm curious, like, do you have an end goal? Or like, what?
End goal?
Do you think about that?
I've thought about it because, well, forever it was just totally focus on shops, focus on the customer, and it still very much 100% is. But there are points, right, where, you know, we've talked about as an owner, you want to be able to be financially, like, okay with what you're doing, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, I think, like, it's important where I feel like for everything that I've put into it, I want to feel that, hey, I'm essentially earning a salary that makes sense for that, right? To put it plainly.
Yeah.
I think it's going to get there, but I personally want to reinvest as most as possible now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think, like, at least for us, the opportunity is really good. There's not, you know, really good options out there. It's going to be an interesting transition into digital and print on demand and fulfillment.
Are you trying to make Printavo a company that could bridge that gap for printers to go print on demand?
We are serving shops to be able to help them grow and organize. And that's just where they're going to go. So that's where we're going to help try to lead.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's no question that, you know, the big press maker, M&R and Rock, for example, the, you know, two of the largest probably, at least here, are investing a lot into digital.
Yeah.
A lot. And that's all they talk about. Right. And so there's a big sign. You guys saying that is a big sign where people don't want to have inventory. People want stuff quick. They don't care as much about quality.
Yeah.
Right. Is another big sign. Seeing some of these, I think it's still very expensive to get into it properly. Like, you can't just get one DTG or, you know, like, you really need either 15 or digital squeegee or something
to, like, start with. And it's like nothing.
Yeah. And the tech is still sort of getting there, but
it's the worst.
Everybody's talking about, I mean, and plus you see, we were just talking about this, but the percentage of total retail sales that went e-commerce, especially over COVID, jumped from like 17% to 29%.
Wow.
Or 26, something like massive, right? It jumped 50% within a month in April. So, you know, and plus, a small business, a barbershop, also doesn't want to be stocking shirts, like you said.
Yeah.
Right?
So I have a question. Well, so like with Printavo, like you're, okay, it's like in your name, right? Like Printavo, but have you thought about
Digitavo?
Like, yeah, why aren't you in other industries like Clean Tavo or like Contractor Tavo or like whatever, you know, like.
I mean, it's so hard. I personally feel we actually had this discussion early on because there's so many near spaces, right? Signage, engraving, and it's so hard to get one right really well. That we're going to add other layers that we're trying to also do at the same time. It's like already hard enough to hire the right people to help build the right products, to help service it, to do the sales. So if we can do this one really, really well and then continue to pivot along with where the industry goes, I think we can really tap into that space. And I think there's a lot of shops here, and I think there's a lot of shops that are very textile heavy internationally too.
Can you imagine how pissed Zach would be if you like started dedicating time
to digital,
to like make Printavo for like pets, like pet management or something? Like,
yeah, you know, we do have some interesting shops that come along that we have
this
like
awesome reporting feature, but it only works for the dog program right
now. Yeah,
sorry Zach.
I mean, I think realistically too, you'd have to fundraise or something to actually be able to compete and go broad market, like a Monday.com or like Asana, right?
Have you ever gotten approached by a bigger company?
Oh, yeah. Almost daily they send
emails.
Yeah.
Really?
Like, well, because they hire, what they do is they'll hire more junior people that are reaching out to companies that they find through their databases and are like, hey, we want to talk. We're this investment company. We have this much to invest. I mean, it's just emails, though. So who knows if it goes through. But I think to 100% own the business means that the control and the focus is on our customer, not on satisfying our investor and then the customer, because they put all this money in, you know, so technically they're the focus first and returning their money. Then the next is, how do we do that with the customer? So, and then we can do whatever the heck we want. Like we want to make it fun. We want to do that. If you invest, you have to allocate those dollars to hiring, to growth, and it's not, that doesn't seem that fun. It's anyway.
We've had similar discussions, you know, when people want to invest in Barrel Maker, and it's like, I don't know.
It's like, do I have to talk to you before I like
Same. You are sort of this. That's what the board meetings.
Yeah,
and then,
yeah.
You know, here's where we're going.
And
here's
it's a loss of control. You know, like I don't know. You
seems like it causes a lot of delay or potential delays too between just being able to take action when you're like motivated. It's like you're like cool. I'm like feeling pumped. I have this idea. Let's do it. Versus like, hey guys, we got to talk about this thing. You know, and
sure, kind of yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. I feel like Barrel Maker in some way has run on this like the creative energy behind it is very like spontaneous, and I feel like it might just like die in a boardroom.
Yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah.
Are you typically like pretty motivated and like upbeat with like Printavo, or like do you get down? Like,
I have such like an optimistic view on like everything. It's very hard to like drag it down. Yeah, I mean, and this sounds sort of braggy, but it's to a point where it's like detrimental sometimes because I'm like, oh, let's just do this and blah, 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 and like the team's like, whoa, hold on, you know, like let's think about this. It's, you know, and I'm thankful that they do sort of reel it in a bit, so it's a good balance between the two.
Who's your biggest competitor?
I would say it depends. So Upmarket, ShopWorks, and Impress are probably larger competitors. There are a couple competitors that just do stores, obviously. Inksoft, Order My Gear. You know, Inksoft's trying to do a little bit more shop management. And then sort of below, I kind of consider like ShopFox or SignFox type. There's also the Fast Manager. To be honest, I think a lot of shops are still very much so on QuickBooks, whiteboard, pen and paper. We kind of joke that our biggest competitor is pen and paper because we talk to more shops that are just not using anything.
Yeah.
Or trying to piece it together, which makes sense.
How do you find new shops?
That's what we did too.
Yeah. Like, what's your strategy now for like finding like new customers?
It's interesting because when you said that, I kind of go into the day thinking that this is the last day. I want to have more of that. I feel like I used to have more of that. What's that?
Like, do you ever worry that you're going to get a bunch of cancellations or no?
It's hard for me to focus on that part because we have a really good success team now that's like just executes and focuses on that. So I can focus on like that, like you talk about the sales, partnerships, marketing stuff. I find that I can't do. I mean, it's like you said, you can't do everything well. And when I try to do that, it's a lot of anxiety. It's just not a good situation.
Yeah.
What the heck were we even talking about? Where are we going?
I don't know. I think purchase orders don't have a price on them. I think that's...
Oh, jeez. I think it's really important, though, for like for the person who's like innovating something new or like the leader of a team to have just like that positivity that like won't quit.
No, it's great.
Yeah, I think that a lot of like people I know who are heads of businesses like also have that quality, which is just interesting.
It's it's like the whole traction. They say that there's like an innovator and the implementer.
Yeah.
Innovator.
Or something like that, right? Yeah. Where one's like sort of like just looking like the next year, the next 2 years, or whatever, and then the other one's like operationally trying to digest it and execute it.
Prank call StockUp.
Is StockUp actually still... StockUp's a competitor? I would say that they're more.
You didn't mention them, and I was wondering if they're still. Are they still around?
Yeah, they had some. Suffered from some controversy, did they not?
I think Bruce made that up.
It's owned by a shop, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah. I think somebody was saying that like
they say that it's not, but it is. Right? Or do they now?
So, I don't know. Somebody was saying like the client list. There's no way that the client list is not like visible.
I don't know the details. I mean, I met with them a couple times a while ago. I think it's an interesting. It has some interesting concepts to it.
Yeah.
But we are so heavy investing on making the program a place where you can start your shop and then grow. Like a 10 auto type of shop and continue to. And so there's a lot, like as we move up that and we're building more to go up market like that, there's just so like the capacity, the scheduling.
Yeah.
And then on top of it, you've got shops that are all managing stuff. Like I wanted to do it this way and do it that way.
Yeah.
So how do you make it really flexible?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, our problem, like you guys talk about, is just big people. We have discovered that you can't just hire any person who can code and just put them in and be like, help us own this. It's almost, it almost takes away progress because you fix stuff that they may have broken. You guide them and spend all this time. And it's like, if you spend the extra time to find the right people, then it turns out so much better. Thanks so much for being able to join us, guys. It's been awesome. Thanks so much, everybody who's listening to the Printavo Printhusters podcast. Printavo's Printhusters podcast. It's been awesome. This is Justin Moore and Aaron Moore.
Way better. Printavo's Printhusters podcast or Printavocast.
Realmaker, aka the newest branding agency in Buffalo Grove, Illinois. Yeah. We'll see you guys next time.
Yeah, thank you, Bruce.